I asked every commercial this time.
Yeah, too much partying. I have no sympathy.
Party? Yeah.
Wish, huh?
Things are good.
Are we good to go?
Okay. Wait to see whether we get our park or our traveling from.
All right, so let's get started. Call a meeting to order. I'm going to kind of be the chairperson today. Kelsey's saying that he's got a bad throat.
I got a little bit of a squawkers today.
So we'll let Kelly off the hook of that. So public comment.
The rest of them are very happy, looking forward to some of the additions in our parks, including the children's celebration.
She's the only one.
And of course, we started off on a small scale, and that looks like it's going to be a lot more inclusive because more people are yet giving us input as to what they would like to see. And Dr. Kahn, some of you may know him from the University of Portland, he's one of our clients and also my neighbor. So even though we have 80 people on the committee right now, it's not that many people right now, we decided to go ahead and add them to it. So he would like to do a little bit more on inclusiveness. Especially we're going to have little murals and things for you, which was not going to take up all that much space and was not going to create any stormwater. Now they're talking about statues to be adapted, small little children's statues. By different organizations. And of course, he also has an engineering background, so he is going to revise some of the rainbow concept where the path was approached through the rainbows. And it's a wheelchair accessible pathway, so two wheelchairs can pass. We're going to have to rethink our stormwater issues. But in the meantime, I wanted to let you know that yes, we're going to have some but we'll need a little bit more of time to take it to the Clyland Kids Fishing because that's where we get a lot of special needs kids on Friday. And we would like them to come sort of look at this and review some of them and give us their input. Usually we have draw us pictures because a lot of them cannot really speak or communicate or write, but they can draw exceptional pictures. And so we've always had them do the fishing, the day that they enjoy. This time we're going to try to see if they can give us some input on the play equipment that we've got. Now we do have a $10,000 foundation grant still there, right? We do need terms of that as to what it can be used for, and I had asked for it but have not received it yet. I believe that there is a new foundation person here maybe today.
Yeah.
Excellent. He's going to be here at the top because we do have potential of two grants. But they would be going to the foundation account, but they wanted to know some terms and stuff like that. And then also, we will be providing a preliminary sketch to Bill for approval first and advice and guidance first after the planning decision. So, and I was going to talk about the waiver, but maybe if I could have a few minutes during the waiver discussion. Should I address it now?
Why don't you wait till your waiver discussion?
And thanks for doing everything that you can do.
All right, so she didn't do that a lot. Is anyone who signed up? Anybody else?
No, it was me.
Okay, all right. All right, so we'll move on to administrative actions. Roll call. We've got a quorum. Want to introduce Kevin Half, our newest member to the board, our advisory board.
Whoop whoop.
We'll let him give him grace on this meeting, and you know he's drinking from a fire hose, trying to learn how everything's
absolutely
going,
which way's going. So feel free to ask questions of anybody that we're all here to help and
thank you.
Help you and get caught up in everything. It'd be great.
great, look forward to meeting you all and kind of learning everybody's names. And Bill, thank you for your time last week to kind of get me oriented and give me that big binder to try to read in a week. It was a challenge. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're...
Sure. I'm recently retired. I had a career with the Army Corps of Engineers in recreation, about 40 years in recreation, from park ranger when I was a kid in Las Vegas to an adult here in the Pacific Northwest. Outdoor enthusiast, probably like all of you. Like to enjoy the county parks and opportunities we have here in the Pacific Northwest. Married 30 years, two adult kids, one married with a granddaughter and my son-in-law down in Bend, so it gives us an excuse to go down there quite often, which is nice. And a son just recently home from the Army from serving his country 3.5 years. Got a lot to learn. I hope to contribute here soon.
Where were you stationed, Joe, with your career?
With the Army Corps of Engineers, I was in California, Boise, Idaho, Portland, and Walla Walla.
Walla Walla.
Yeah, mostly California in the Pacific Northwest. Anyway, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks to your son for his service.
Thank you.
All right. We have some introductions. I won't consider you a guest anymore. You were here at the last meeting, so that's... let's see, review and adopt minutes.
We might go around and introduce ourselves to Kevin.
Oh, okay.
That'd be great.
If you don't mind.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, yes. I'm Pat Lee with Clark County Parks.
Okay. And I'm Kevin Tyler, also with Clark County Public Works.
I remember your name.
Parks and Lands. So, yeah. Nice to meet you.
Yes. Dave Weston,
Pat.
Jay Chester,
Pat.
Kelly Putney, Pat.
Barbara Anderson, Pat.
Jennifer Halleck, Vancouver Public Schools, and Pat. Kelsey Potter, Pat.
I would be his high and righteous Mr. Spencer.
Boy, it's fun.
Ah, you dogs.
Just to give you a small flavor.
Jennifer Hawks Conright with the Parks Foundation.
Bill Gerke, Parks Manager.
Two new Kevins.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
Wasn't unique in his time.
All right, so we'll go to the review and adopt minutes. We have the, and you'll find in your packet, minutes from the last meeting of February 10th. And then we also have November 18th. So we'll do this individually. So do I have a motion to accept the February 10 meetings, meeting minutes?
Move to accept as presented.
Second?
Second.
All right. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Friday, for the meeting minutes for Friday, November 18th.
Move to accept as presented.
I'll second it.
All right. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. All right. So we got through the fun part of the meeting, I guess. And we've gone through the, and we have done the introduction of the new PAB member, Kevin. So we go to unfinished business. Youth member update.
I met with Elizabeth Hill. She's the gal we met with earlier, John, and explained to her our dilemma of really desiring a youth member, not having the ordinances to sustain or permit that we had discussed it and didn't want to sacrifice an adult member to get a voting member, and how would she view us going forward with this, that we'd like to bring on a trial basis a couple of youth, two being because we think they would work better in a pair, having a comrade in arms, if you will. She thought that would be a high potential because we won't change our time of our meeting, that we need to look at the Running Start and homeschool universe, Running Start is where high school students are going to college, so they have a more flexible schedule. So looking at that, and then my granddaughter mentioned, and you might know more about this, that you have a class in the high school about leadership that may excuse a student during our meeting once a month, so that they wouldn't look like they were skipping school. And we need to pursue that option a little more. What Elizabeth is doing is, I sent her an email that just laid forth the fact that we really don't have a clear vision of what this youth member would do. And what we were looking for were youth that had enough experience with leadership seminars or participation on other councils that they might actually guide us. I think, number one, that's important for them to feel a little more empowered in the position, since it's not going to be voting. And I actually think that that's a very good idea, because I don't know about the rest of you, I know we want that youthful voice, but I can't define exactly what that job should look like. I don't think any of us could do that. So to me, that sounded good. So she is sending out and appealing to the homeschool universal she's aware of, and also to the Running Start. We should have some feedback by next month on if anybody was interested in working with us.
Do we have a paragraph on that? Because there's a lot of groups and different programs that offer externships for students, especially as they get into their junior and senior years, that this would be an ideal sort of a qualification around that. And so if we had like a paragraph that we could send out to each of the key connectors, that like I could do it in the Vancouver School District, there we might have a broader base or a bigger pool.
Sure, I think we could do that.
I don't know. Yeah. Just a quick like a paragraph that describes what we do and when we meet, and is there an opportunity for student voice?
Will you write so well? Couldn't you write it?
I could if you want me to, but I don't know.
Would you?
I move to let Jennifer write it all and take care of it for her.
Well, she is so articulate.
She is.
She's knowledgeable. I don't think anybody here is better versed in it than her. And she knows how her system works.
How are the youth applying? Is there a link, or is there? Are they just sending in cover letters and resumes? What's the process?
Yes. Yes. She is going. We will interview. Okay. Is what I told her. We would just chat with each of the kids. And then we would select. If we get two volunteers, we're going to be dancing.
So I know someone who is in Running Start, goes to Clem River, but is in Running Start. So how would I tell her how to apply? Who do I have her connect with?
Oh, all she has to do is indicate with an email to either Elizabeth or me.
Okay.
Is what I said.
Okay.
And that we would, with contact information, and indicating that they had permission from their parents to do this.
Okay.
Because that's important.
Why don't we have Jennifer send us out this paragraph to the members, and then you'll have it. But the things you just said should be in her paragraph.
Yeah. Yeah, because
I think she was taking notes.
I didn't think that there was any better way than to interview the students, because they don't have much in the way of a resume.
Yeah, I just wanted to know how they connect with the process. Right. Yeah. A lot of our kids probably have a resume. They're all applying for
Slap me down.
That's okay. No, a big portion of them are applying for college, and so they have a little something about themselves.
Okay.
You know, that's part. A large part of.
Well, then maybe we should say they should just give us a paragraph of why they think they'd like to contribute.
Paragraph of interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
we can keep it to paragraph.
Yeah.
Or the text message,
put
that way.
So, text message, no emojis.
Can we IM it? They get along rapid.
So we made a little progress.
No emojis. Yeah. Another one after saying, see what you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, we made forward progress. Oh, yeah, one more thing. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
A mentor within our group that would assume responsibility to take this youth under their wing. That doesn't make them feel like we're babysitting them, but that we are truly partnering with them. To me, that's the key point, and Elizabeth feels that that's going to be a real strong success factor for us. You know, if we treat them like they're coming here just as because it looks good.
How will
versus truly valuing
the process that you're going to go through? Who will be doing the interviews?
Well, we need to decide that, don't we? You and Jay.
I didn't know whether it already happened.
No, no.
So
I had to come up with something by the seat of my pants, Kelly,
okay.
And that's all I could come up with was that we would interview them for the selection process.
Because that's where the mentor could come
yeah,
into play.
That's
yeah. So,
all right.
So push comes to shove, I would be a mentor, but I'd like the opportunity to be open to the group as well.
I can spend some time with them.
Yes, I think that that will be really cool for them.
And are we looking for a school year commitment for one school year or longer? Or what are we
I also said that the age group, I'll send you the email I sent her. I should have sent it out to everybody. Oh, I did. Did I send it out to everybody? I didn't send it to you. I don't have your contact. Oh, well, I will send it again if I didn't. Because I said age group 14 to 19. And I think I said it was a one-year commitment to start. Because we did discuss that in the group, that it would be, if we did this, it would be the one-year term. Automatically renewable. How many times was it, John?
I think we just said a couple years.
Yeah, so that it was equivalent to our terms.
Turn over anyway.
But, you know, not asking for a three-year commitment from someone in high school because their lives change so quickly. But it would auto-renew without having to reapply as long as they continue to show interest. We got that far on defining it.
Would it be possible for this person to have a definable like outcome from their involvement with us, like a project or something that they would get their hands on put on their resume? I don't know the scope. I'm still getting my feet wet here, but I know a lot of kids like to have something that they're definable responsible for.
Yeah,
and at the end they can say, "Boom, I did."
Everybody likes to have a definable project, and we were not able. That was part of it. That's why I said to Elizabeth that the primary outcome of this would be for us to be able to clearly define what that role is. They would help us develop that role so that we could then go to the commissioners and say, we would like to, even if we can't get voting members because of state restrictions, that we could get them as, like the schools, ad hoc, and add them in at our ordinance level to legitimize them. That is the outcome that we need from this first group. Although they will learn a lot about perks and the way the process works within that. Does that make sense?
Yep, makes sense.
Yeah, starting out, we're new, you know.
Right.
So we're
but I just know from
feeling
the students,
our way.
From the students' perspective, if they sit around a board meeting, there's a lot of talking going on, they're not engaged with it, that they have something that they put their thumb on. To say, I did this. I don't know what that could be, Bill. I have no concept of what that could be. But just the thought for maybe the future.
Yeah.
That way, they're not just lumping.
Yeah.
They're doing.
Well, that was the outcome that I defined to Elizabeth, is that we're really working to define it. But that in itself is a task. And an important one. Because it will help develop what we look like into the future.
Okay. So when we do this, Jennifer, when do you think you could have that?
Well, I can work on it. I think that once, I think we may, do we want to be responsible for a 14-year-old that mother drops them off here?
Well, I did have a thought that
I can respond to that because I said kind of the same thing.
Okay.
I was thinking more 16-ish.
I was too.
Okay.
What was the
response? Elizabeth said that she has within her group some very dynamic 14-year-olds that have done a lot on the Youth Commission already that are, she said, would be a great asset. And that was why we went with 14. We can change that. You know, my comfort level was 16, thinking they could drive themselves.
I certainly could put 14 and 19 and just, it would be interesting to see the...
Well, the interview process could weed out any 14-year-old that wasn't just dynamite.
The roadblock I'm thinking of is a district allowing this to go out to schools to have 14-year-olds come in. I think okay. That whole sense of where is the student and where are they at and who's watching over them and what's happening.
I think we're a little ways away from sending out to the school district.
Right, but I'm just saying that whatever the definition of paragraph is going to have to be reviewed by a certain level before it can really...
go out.
If it goes out through that channel.
Yeah.
Like homeschool and all that, very differently.
Yeah.
Something to think about. Why don't we just create a quick subcommittee to just get her done rather than having to bring something back to this group again in the next meeting, because you know, school year's already there. I'd rather get it going and basically see how it goes.
The interview committee.
Mm-hmm. Just get that going. Committee, yeah.
Yeah.
Much easier.
Sure.
Yeah. Although, you want to chair that? No. I'll chair it.
Okay.
All right. Any other volunteers?
I'll join in with it.
John. Jennifer? You're a no-brainer on the committee, right?
I certainly could try. I have a little bit of a commitment between now and the end of the school year that I may not be able to.
Okay, but you can at least get the paragraph.
Your part will be the paragraph anyway. So.
But yeah, right. I'm into the paragraph.
You want to muddle in with us, Kevin?
I'm going to hold off for right now. I just want to get the school
okay.
with the knees going on the first one.
Open in the door.
All right. So you'll, it's you and John for right now.
I guess it's John and I for now.
We'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
Make it work and have confidence. All right, so.
Include me. I will.
All right.
The PIF update and balance of concurrences.
Okay.
Status.
So, Kevin on board now. I think Kevin, you're asking for a larger PIF map.
Yes.
And so I'm going to pass these out. We've got enough at least to go around the table, I hope. But that is the PIF map that we've got. The bottom area, the darker shaded area, of course, is the city of Vancouver. And so next to you, you should see the PIF balances sheet and concurrency. And so you can actually correspond the PIF districts with the districts that you see on the maps. One thing that we did differently, so just to first talk about the cash balances, which is what we share each and every month. The one thing we did this month, Laura actually did this. She's actually now showing a couple more rows here that shows what the last month's PIF balance was, what this month's PIF balance is, and what we've actually accrued over this last month. So if you look at the bottom line there, it says increase since 12/31/2016. You can actually see what we brought into each PIF district over the month. So for instance, PIF 5, we brought in $52,793 in this last month. PIF 6 is $49,742. PIF 7 is $5,879. PIF 8 was pretty busy. We had $85,550. PIF 9, $20,472. And look at this, Barbara. PIF 10, we actually got our first installment.
From Stem.
We've been
what's
zero
his name?
All along. Now we got $15,568. That means there's some new development going on in your district.
All right. Give me money.
Yes.
I got plans.
I have to add a couple zeros to that. But one thing I was going to bring up to the group here. Do you have a question? Okay. On the PIF concurrency, very little changes from month to month. As you see, if you look at the PIF concurrency sheet, go down to the red, and you're going to look down. The first red installment is April of 2020. I don't know if we really need to show these every month.
I like them. I still like them.
Okay, that's fine.
Only because they sneak up on us.
Okay.
If they don't stick in your face, they sneak up on you.
All right, so.
So I like the red. It really, besides, that's got to be a feel good for you, given that you had so many up here at the top.
Yeah.
Look, this is progress.
You want to see it monthly or quarterly? Because it's not really going to
be quarterly. I'm suggesting quarterly.
I'm good with quarterly.
Okay, that's fine. As you can see, our closest concurrency is in April of 2020.
Yeah.
And if we buy another piece of property, it's going to go down to much farther down the list. So, okay? All right. So that is the update on that.
I have one question on that. Do you know, when I talked with Chris Roper, I understood that the city was going to redefine their PIF districts?
They actually did.
Is this reflecting that?
No, it's not. And so what they did, they actually created three PIF districts instead of the five that they had in the past.
Uh-huh.
So they've got PIF 1, which is west of I-5, PIF 2, which is in between I-5 and 205, and PIF 3, which is east of I-5. So I will see if I can get an updated map from them.
Oh, okay. I was just curious with this being the map.
The only thing that'll do is pop the 5 and the 4, so it's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. And see, back in 2014, we had entertained the thought of actually combining our districts, and that was our layout as well. West, in between two highways, and east, so we got three districts that we're proposing. I don't know if we're going to go there yet or in the near future. It's something probably worth thinking about. That's for a further time.
Okay.
I think it makes more sense in the city to have done that. We're emerging neighborhoods where they're pretty established neighborhoods.
Correct.
Yeah.
Bill, just so I'm clear on this.
Yes.
This is what's forecasted, not as what's current, correct? This is what we're looking at each year, like January's 07, April's in 2020?
Yes.
Is that what we're looking at?
Yes.
So I'm understand this.
So, when we receive PIF dollars, we've got 10 years to expend those dollars.
Okay.
And so, when you see from month to month what we're bringing in, and so if you see this month's PIF amounts that come in right here on this bottom line, the numbers I just rattled out, ten years from this month, there'll be a concurrency if we don't spend them.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have to track those exact dollars on a 10-year basis?
Yes, we do.
By month? By month.
It used to be 7. We pushed it up to 10 because of the great recession.
Okay. Six. Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
All right.
Boy,
For the next two items, we're going to need a motion. So just so everybody understands, when we get through our discussion, be a call for a motion. So, Bill, you want to go ahead and do that for two hours?
Your next page in your packet is the Berry property. And so this is on Northwest 149th Street, Northwest 11th Avenue. Fairgrounds is to the north. Whipple Creek is to the northwest. And so right here in the intersection of these two roads here, we've got a property that Mr. Berry would like to sell us. And I brought this up at our last meeting, but on this meeting, I'd like to see a recommendation to move forward. So this is a 9-acre parcel. And we are engaged in doing an option agreement right now with Mr. Berry. And we'd like to break this parcel in two and have the county will buy the entire thing, but we'll keep the front piece for parks and the back piece will be clean water division. And they'd like to do a project on the creek here. So that'll actually, they'll actually hopefully pay half the cost of the acquisition, and that'll reduce our cost. And so, with topography, this whole area is flat. It starts dropping into a canyon. It's really steep, and it's, of course, you got the creek that runs through here. So we would retain the front 4.5 acres. And so the reason I'd like to split this is so we don't have to pay for so much street frontage improvements when we go to develop this park. So we'll be required to improve up to here. And so we won't have to pay for all of this. So that is the plan going forward. And as I brought it up to your attention, in PIF District 10, which is where this is at, we also have that other piece of property that we're looking at. I have not heard anything about that lately from the Washington Rangers, if you will, or Vancouver Rangers. And so we want to move forward, and I know the Parks Advisory Board recommended going after both of them. So we're going to go full steam ahead on this piece of property.
Okay.
Bill, what's the likelihood of 11th going all the way through? Does it dead end somewhere up there? I don't know.
No, 11th goes through now.
It goes
it's
all
10th,
through.
But they're
it goes
bunching
all the
through.
179th Street and beyond.
Yeah, it's northeast 10th.
Well, no, I'm just asking about 11th. I don't
think okay, yeah.
Yeah, it goes through.
It will.
It already does.
This is pretty steep in here, Kelly. Quite a slope coming down 11th right here, and then it starts to flatten out right in here.
And it's one lot, one parcel.
It's one parcel. Yeah, we'll do a final adjustment, get it split into two. That's the idea. We'll just put it into a different county tax or a different county.
I think it's a great solution.
I'd like to move that we label this a very good idea.
I'm just wondering if I should abstain from any
overall motion. All right. Any more discussion? So can I have a motion to move forward as?
I'll make a motion that we move forward to purchase this property in partnership with utility. Is it the utility?
Clean Water Division. They're with
as described by Bill Beebe.
Since I have a personal vested interest, do I need to abstain from?
Okay,
I'm just asking what's appropriate.
Second, and then you'll be fine.
I second.
Are you getting any
questions? All right. So it has been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right.
Thank you.
Good job.
Yay!
All right. So the next item of unfinished business is the park fee waiver policy draft.
Yes. So that should be in your handouts. And we, since the handout that you recently got, we've got a newer update for you. We're going to pass those out right now. We changed number 5, where it refers to the non-discrimination policy, which we've actually don't have a non-discrimination policy for our users. We do have a non-discrimination policy for our employees, but that's just more to go right now. So we decided to actually put the language into there about non-discrimination versus referring to our policy.
Okay.
Has everybody had a chance to actually go down through these? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I looked through them.
All right.
Oh, so they came from both directions.
You just had to be
behind.
Yeah. So to kick off discussion, my first thought when I read this is I could see.
God bless you.
I don't know, a soccer group saying, you know, we want our field for free every year. And there's number 3 that says that it's a once a year thing, not a series, but I thought we might need to strengthen that somehow, and because this isn't intended for your run of the mill.
And there is one exception, and that is for Field 3, which is right behind us right here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a RCO Youth Athletic Facilities grant on that field, and so they have, because we do have a grant on that on those fields, we have to allow for groups that have scholarships, you know, for underprivileged kids. I want to play. We can discount them, but just for that particular field. And that's the only field that we've got in the county system that one of this applies right now. There's also, we do have a youth athletic facilities grant out at Harmony Sports, but they're the ones that are handling that out there. So that's essentially an exception to the rule.
So I'm not quite sure what to say other than to strengthen and say specifically maybe this is not intended for ongoing field usage or something.
Well, I think it does say that down in here. That
does it say that somewhere else?
There's something about not repeating. Oh, just Luke. No, I think the whole fee waiver thing, it says something in here about that. Yeah. Not for ongoing.
Once a year and not a series of events.
Yes, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, we deliberated over that and want to make sure that you know, all of our sports players not free.
Yeah.
Put a kind of out of business when it comes to the fees.
So
I'm going to tiptoe around number 5, okay?
Sure.
Because I think that any type of discrimination is abhorrent. I'm going to go on record for that. However, I do know, Bill.
Yes.
At the July 4th celebration down at Philida, which I've been involved in for years, that there was a little problem there when someone from, was it Ku Klux Klan? It was some skin, yes. Aryan nation wanted a booth there.
So yes.
And I just, they in their essence, their core belief is discrimination. I would not take my children to an event if that were there. I'm going to be honest. So to exclude them would in itself be exclusionary. How do you propose issues like this be handled?
Well, weren't you just saying we don't have a user policy?
They just defined that you can't...
Making one?
Right.
Would be the solution?
Yes, and we're talking about doing that. So we need to find that and see if we can put that in place. So,
yeah.
I do recall that when it happened. I know we talked to them a lot. We have a interesting group, and we also have political candidates that like to go out and rally, as well during these bigger events. And so the discussion at the time was as long as they're not disturbing people, as long as they're not, drawing attention, away from the actual event to themselves, by using loudspeakers, that kind of thing. I guess they are allowed because it is open park. But we do need to create a policy where discrimination is in play. So that is something that we'll have to create.
I think we need to protect family values. It's right. Just that simple.
Yes. For the purpose of this policy here, of course, our fees are going to be going into place here very soon. And so we probably need to get this moving forward to a final draft, as soon as possible. So
well, summer's coming, yeah.
Yes. And so, Eric, is there anything that you want to talk about on this specifically?
Covered what's on your sheet, as item 13, about the lights here, so that was the kind of big one.
We talked about, field three.
But just, we want to be thoughtful and careful that it's equitable, so that there's not necessarily something we discussed grandfathering versus not grandfathering, and we lean towards not grandfathering for previous events, that every event every year should apply for this so that everybody's on the same level. Mm-hmm. So that was a focus of this. And then making sure that when we get requests, and usually I'm the one that gets requests for park use permit fees or parking fees to be waived, we want to be thoughtful about how we draft it so that it doesn't just open some kind of Pandora's box where everybody's all of a sudden applying for fee waivers for this, that, or the other. So there's a balance there between those groups that provide youth engagement or focus or education. For example, one event every year is Columbia Spanish Watershed Festival. They've requested fee waivers year after year, as has the Climeline Kids Fishing Derby. So those are events that provide a specific focus. One-time events, they're not, like, for example, a youth league or an adult league of some sort that meets once or twice a week over the course of 6 months. So we want to make sure we address that within the policy. So.
I don't want to make this a bigger thing. I just want to throw this out as food for thought. I like the youth-oriented events, but I think there's also things like the Special Olympics that hold occasional, like the Polar Plunge in Portland. They do it on the Kelly Point. There's veterans groups. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there on what other people's thoughts are about not necessarily shifting the focus from youth-oriented, but understanding that there's other really valuable groups who help people in the community with disabilities or other worthy groups who may want something like this too. And do we want it so narrowed on youth, or do we want it a little more open? And if we open it, is it Pandora's box? Is it going to be too big? But it's hard for me to say, oh, well, the Special Olympics can't apply, but this can happen. That's this whole thing. That's how it gets so tricky, which we've talked about from the beginning when we talked about putting something in writing. So I just want to put that out there and see what other people's thoughts are.
Yep.
I want to kind of take a different tack. I brought this up when we first talked about this. I believe that we're back into the fee business. We are out of the general fund. Our issue is revenue. And I would like to think that we could put a cap on how much of the fee waiver of the total we're going to do. I want to put, and I'll just throw a number for just the sake of conversation. Matter of fact, you should just sit down up here and join us with this conversation. I think we should let's just say 10% of the total revenue will be in fee waiver. And each one of these waivers ought to have a value to it. And each value, I really think we should be going, turning around and going back to the counselors and asking them to provide us with a grant pot, or maybe to the Parks Foundation or somebody, to give us the funds that we are losing as we do these waivers. Because in the bottom line of things, we wouldn't have a fee at all if we didn't have to. But we do have to be physically responsible, and it does cost us as a community to have these events. And it takes administrative time and all that. So I guess what I'm hoping for is at least a cap on the amount of waivers that go to the total of the events that we have throughout the year. And secondly, possibly get a fund in place that replaces that 10% that we're giving away through some other means. That's my point.
I was going somewhere similar to that, and it fits with Kelsey's. Why not just say, you know, let's go with the 10%, but it's open to any nonprofit organization, and that limits it.
Yeah, but then how do you do it? First come, first serve, who puts in?
Yeah,
so, just so you know, a lot of our events are from nonprofit organizations. We have church groups that go out there, mm-hmm. especially, you know, there's a whole myriad of nonprofits that utilize our parks. And so we have to really, really seriously think about drawing a line. And we thought the line would be around youth.
Yeah.
And so, otherwise, we're opening up
too much.
Huge door.
Well, you'd have to get a new staff member just to evaluate the request.
That was one of my questions, is in this policy, the park manager makes all the decisions. That's the person. And that's a heck of a responsibility.
Well, see, right now, it's according to county code, it's our county counselors who actually make the determination.
Okay.
And
they'll actually have a question for that.
Oh, David, okay.
And just, this is part of the reason why I was late, because we're people who came up to the top. Based on the code, it's vague enough that Mark McCauley can authorize the fee waiver either way, and so that's part of what we have to look at. And so what my understanding is that they're looking at delegating that potentially to you, and then having, you know, if there's like an appeal process or something, maybe escalating that to Mark if needed.
And that's the way the policy.
But I told you previously, it's like since changed, so I just wanted to.
Okay, thank you, Amanda.
Yeah.
Amanda's our attorney, by the way.
Yeah.
So, if I just might complicate things more, something that we do as a school district is we say there is a nonprofit rate and there's a for-profit rate. And if you can show your nonprofit status and provide that certificate, your rate is discounted from a for-profit organization who rents your parks to, you know, for their business for the summer, which is, you know, an acceptable use of our parks as well. But there are different rates. And then, as a district, the only part that we feel is not a gift of public funds is the waiving of the rental fee. All the other associated hard fees with a group we don't feel should be borne by the rest of the community for that particular group's activity. So that's the removal of garbage, security that might be needed. Any hard cost cleanup that would be associated never get waived. Well, I can't say never. They are very rarely waived, and then we go down and do another scale of can they do their own cleanup, what is required. But nope, there is a minimum under SEIU contract that we have a 2-hour custodian, so it adds cost and we get that, but it takes us out of the we like this group and we think they're good for kids and that group's not as good for kids because they're charging kids more money and this group's not, and because it's a mess. But if you, just a thought as you get deeper into thinking about fee waivers, creating that sort of, I mean, as a citizen, I'm not all that comfortable paying for the hard costs that another group wants to have at an event, especially if it's not an event that I would think is, so it's a thought.
It's a good
There's
thought.
Always a little skin in the game from everyone. And
Did you organizations come out and reach to us looking for this, or are we doing it kind of as a public service type? Is there a demand from
We're doing it because we're reintroducing parking fees.
Okay, yeah.
They were turned off in the middle of 2013.
Okay.
And so with the fees coming back, and we're also expanding the fee program to include community parks. We're also actually increasing cost of our rentals, our shelters.
Right.
And so traditionally, we've had fee waivers. And how many have we had typically in a year's time?
This, a handful.
A handful. It's not a lot of them. But we thought with the reintroduction of fees and the extended fee program, we could expect to see quite a few more, potentially. So that's why I wanted to bring it to this group to figure out who should we allow those folks to get a fee waiver from. And this policy actually started off by being a fee waiver, fee reduction policy. So like Jennifer said, if we have like a two-tier, you know, profit, for-profit versus non-profit, that's something to be considered. But we actually kind of pared it down to just fee waivers because there's so few of these.
I was on a committee with a CORE where we did a national policy where we looked at our user fees, what we call it SUP, special use permits.
Uh-huh.
It was for anything like basically like this is outside
right.
the norm.
Yes.
And we figured out what the costs were for janitorial, for security, for parking, for lights, all that kind of stuff. And we set that as basically the base fee that we would charge for getting a special use permit. Then we got into the work that we're doing here with looking at discounts. And for our organizations, the fees, we weren't able to retain the fees. So for us, we didn't have a lot of skin in the game. But if we've got a situation here where we retain those user fees and we can do capital improvements with them or acquisition or development with those fees, everybody wins by everybody. So that's kind of the position I'm coming from is it's great to give discounts, but the cost to do this is probably pretty nominal for even a non-for-profit group. And the whole community benefits from everybody paying rather than just special groups. And I kind of, Kelsey off brought up a good point too, I've written down too. Veterans, AA, Narcotics Anonymous, Friends of Jesus, I mean, whatever you have. If I think we open the door this way, it potentially opens up what broader door for more people to say, well, youth is getting one, how come we can't get one? And then we have to justify that continuously.
Bill and Eric, one thing that would help me a lot is, can you give just like a rough guesstimate on, let's say Klein Line's full, for the kids fishing festival, how much money are we talking in parking? I just need kind of some numbers to help me figure out how much money we're talking about.
I could pull that up and get you an answer.
Okay.
Didn't we lose $400,000 annually when they cut the parking fee a few years ago?
The last year of the program, the revenue was about $325,000 for county parks.
Oh.
On a busy day, you probably could be talking as much as 5,000 or more. And that's at Louisville. I'd have to go look and see what Klein Line is.
Okay.
And that's just one, I mean, that could be just one site on a busy summer day.
Yeah. So let's say the fishing derby, I think is what she's saying, like how much would you charge them if you charged them to rent the entire facility with the parking and at the whole thing for a day for a fishing event? What would be the fee for that?
Our highest rate for a permit per day is $800 per day.
$800.
So what the parking would be, it's hard to guess. If
that would be wrapped into the whole thing though, right? Like you're going to rent the park and the parking becomes free with the whole rental, so it's $800.
$800 a day, and then we have events that have vendors, some of them have paid participants, so there are a number of different fees, but that particular event, I mean, at least that would be what you're looking at. Probably $1,500 for at least a weekend. In terms of permit fees, parking fees, you know, it's per day, so.
So we don't combine the two. If someone rents the entire park, the parking is free.
No, you pay your parking separate.
Right, parking is separate. That is the big money getter. Paid by the parking fees. That's where we make the big money from.
And this isn't going to waive the parking fees.
No.
This is just
well,
the
they're asked,
facility.
Well, they're asked to in your
it could,
request.
Yeah,
oh, it could.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, like the fishing derby, that was probably going to be with, and it has been for the last several years. You know, it's for kids. You know, the 4th of July parade, Arch of Light is another one. We did do a waiver for a stand-up paddleboard competition out in Washougal. That was a big international event. Going forward this year, if they were to come back, we would waive it. But that we went to the counselors. I don't think they showed up last year, but the year before. They wanted to do the alcohol thing and everything, so the counselors had to approve all of that. But that was no, they didn't have to pay for anything. So let me
do this. Lyman, you wanted to speak to this?
Yes, I
committed that we'd let you have some time. So.
Yes, thank you. So one of the things that the pipeline education was hoping for is that it's going to be a public policy that is fair to nonprofits. And of course, one of the other things that they have is 4,000 to 5,000 participants registered. I was supposed to be an Olympian, so I wasn't ready. But there are 4,000 kids. We already have 2,000 kids that are registered. There are 2 days. One is special needs, special disabilities, kids with impairments day on Friday. On Saturday, it's open to other kids. And of course, right now, 2,000 kids are registered. We also give, Philida gives scholarships to these kids. And then also we have, there are groups that are coming in, so they're only part one band or whatever. But the problem is that we cannot stop anybody else from coming in. So everybody wants to see the kids fishing. I mean, that's a great event, and that's a great exposure, especially for kids with special needs. And unfortunately, if we have to pay for all that parking out there, and we, I'm talking about Flight and Neighborhood Association is partnering with it. We help them get their 501c3, but we are partners and we try to help each other. And when I say we, I mean all of us, including U.S. Fish and Wildlife and all the other agencies that are supporting this for kids' education on outdoor sports, as well as safety, welfare, and health reasons. So this is a quote-unquote community event that does draw at least 40,000 registered kids. Of course, they bring in the other kids, they bring in the adults, and then we have people that are coming in. So that's for the 4th of July. Of course, the Philida Neighbor Association was the one that really put in about $1 million of value added benefits into that park to build it, because this was before our proposition, less taxes for maintenance, that passed by 27 votes just because they all voted. But the shelter was built by our partners because we, the Philida Neighbor Association, had asked them to do that. So we were hoping that there would be some sort of a recognition for partners as well, because that would also incentivize their giving to the Parks Foundation, their giving pro bono or in-kind donations to the parks as a whole. And so for them to be sort of kind of lumped in with the youth education or engagement events doesn't really ring a bell, because, you know, like you said, they're for-profits and they're non-profits. But there's some legitimate registered non-profits that should be recognized. Not the ones that say, hey, we're non-profit, but we have this neo-Nazi educational component that we'd like to do. Would you like to partner with us so we don't have to pay the fees? And we say, absolutely not. So if you put in that they have to be bona fide registered or bona fide non-profit organization, that would help us out as well. So, but then also the, Kelsey was saying about the youth-oriented versus the all. We consider the 4th of July as a children's event that includes all children from 2 to 102 because the kids have to come with their parents. And of course the kids are the ones that bring the adults that then participate, donate to the foundation, they volunteer in the parks, the parks heroes all over the county, not just in Philida. And so you need to somehow differentiate the bona fide nonprofits. I mean, we're a 501c3. We're registered with the state, we're registered with the feds. But here you're just kind of leaving it open, hey, anybody basically. So, but then also the, and it needs to be stressed that it's a youth education or engagement, community engagement events, not my neo-Nazi group would like to reach out. So
can I give you one more minute?
Sure. I'm almost there. So then also, when you're talking about application to Clark County Parks and Eastern Basin prior to the event, of course the KKF, or the Kids, Klein-Nine Kids Fishing, is starting here April 7th. So they were worried about when does this take effect? Are they included? Because, you know, it's past our 30 days application now. Because they were not even engaged in the communication on this particular item, even though we reached out. So, but then also the standing partners. I think if you're going to have partners, you need to somehow recognize that relationship as well.
So this is a item that we were looking for a motion today. Go ahead.
Well, just something to touch on that what Jennifer said and what Dr. Allen was saying, and me being an events planner for the Parks Foundation, is that a lot of the budgets that we have actually have space for parking buyouts. So instead of park fee waivers, have you considered maybe doing like a park buyout for for-profit events where they can buy out the parking lot and whatever dollars that you see, and then like nonprofits could get a discount, or if it's a community event, maybe then get a waiver for the parking fees? That's is something to consider, and I think that's what something what Jennifer was trying to articulate there was the budgets and events, and so but that you could still get revenue from a park or the parking fee buyout, then the guests wouldn't have to pay for the parking fees themselves, but the event coordinators would have that in their budget to pay.
So a lot of times we'll have weddings, or we had a couple of running events this year ask about this. And previously what we've done is we'd call a parking contract where we can coordinate with that event coordinator to pay for the guests of their event. So we do that.
Okay.
But it's only for all their event participants or their event guests. It's not for anyone who just decides to swing by a park on that particular day.
Yeah, didn't you address this in here with some sort of
number 12
tag?
If you look at number 12, it kind of addresses that on the fee waiver.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I knew I'd read it somewhere. Right. Thanks, Bill.
So what we want to do, the purpose of that, or so the intent, is to identify, because we staff, when they're out, if the staff is out collecting fees, they need to know who is part of what event, if they should be collecting or not. And so that is the idea.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great idea, Eric. I thought you handled it really well.
And so even if a big event is going on, you know, like the Fishing Derby, for instance, you're still going to get citizens coming in who are probably not affiliated. They're just into the youth park. And so when we do waive fees, we're going to put it up to the event organizer to create a parking pass that they hand out to their folks that are participating. And then as long as they pass that by us, we recommend that pass. So the people in the booth, when they see that pass, they wave them on through. And if they don't have one, they pay.
Well, they kind of waive them on through. What we do is, at least for parking contracts, and we'd probably take that same approach here, is that we track how many passes we have somebody sign in or whatever, so that we know exactly how many people they have in their event. And then after the event, for folks that are paying the parking fees, we bill them post-event. But in this case, if we're talking about waivers, doing this could potentially allow us to document exactly what someone had a comment about lost revenue, or what revenue actually is for events where we do waive parking fees. So something along those lines. But we have to have staff in place to be able to do that, to get an exact count. Otherwise, if we give folks passes, or if they create passes, we don't have staff there, and we're just relying on the count that they give us. So that's the idea.
Just as another resource, the city has had an enormous amount of successful large events over the past several years, and they have gone through a really good process for their rules and policies and their waivers, and we looked at that as well, and I'm sure you're good friends with them, but you know, you may want to reach out and just see, can you give me your packet or send me to your website, because they have a website that addresses their fee waiver process, and then exclusive use of a park or non-exclusive use of a park, and if vehicles can be on the park or not. And I know none of this is sort of addressed in here because it's a very nice and simple policy, but they have all of this sort of meat behind it that they can apply that, you know, you just might pirate because you're good friends.
So, all right. It says here the effective date is May 1. How much time do you guys need to implement the policy, do you think?
Well, the sooner the better, obviously, because, you know, the fees are going into place. And so it'd be nice to have a fee waiver piece that's approved and ready to go at the same time.
You got to notify folks to apply.
Right.
It says 30 days. I mean, we can handle that on a case-by-case basis.
So a process evolving.
Can I make a
start
suggestion?
With something and then evolve it so that you've got something in place?
Absolutely.
And then go back and do what she said?
Policies can be updated at any time.
Because you can always expand later.
What I'd like to propose is that we get this thing going May 1st. But instead of seeing a date of review on 2020, I want to review it after Labor Day this year, and I'd like to see the percentage of the funds that are waived versus the total fund and the amount that waiver is worth in each case. So if we have that to review after one full summer season, we will have a better feel for it. And I think there's been a lot of time and effort put into this. I like what Jennifer had to say because, you know, we are reinventing the wheel that we had already made a couple of years ago. So
you might recall that. A couple
of years ago. So anyway, if we can move forward, because we could talk about this all day.
Sure. Yeah, that's what we need to bring up.
I just like to say that we move forward with this or whatever we choose here to modify from this today, but then come back to it after later.
So, just so I can I clarify,
yeah.
Just make sure I'm clear. You're looking for the total amount of the fee value or the fees that were waived. Mm-hmm. The total amount
per each waiver.
The total amount at the end of the year, we waived $10,000 of the fees, right. But then also you mentioned a percentage of the fees,
well,
or a percent of the total events that received.
The total revenue brought in. Mm-hmm. If you bring in $400,000 and $40,000 of that is waived.
Yeah.
Then I know you're giving about 10% away.
Right.
And of course, then our next step will be to find a way to recoup that either from the county or something, because we really do not have enough money to operate the system.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you have the ability to easily track it by event so that we can see which were the big takers.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they set it up, the tracking can happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
After they can.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Kelly, if we do approve this policy, then once we put a fee waiver in place, you're not talking about reversing it. You're talking about trying to find funds elsewhere to offset that impact.
Once
we open the door to waivers, it's going to be a lot harder to close than if we close it to start with.
Well, it's appropriate to have it there in place for some events. And we probably want to fine-tune
what
that
find
looks
out
like.
At, in after Labor Day, because kind of
it's
Memorial Day to Labor Day, we find out that 60% is waivered. I think we're going to address that. If it's 10%, that's about as high as I want to go with a waiver program.
Could I suggest maybe sometime in maybe the October meeting, just because we will still have
that's
the number.
That's after Labor Day.
Your time to
just get a little later than
I was trying to be as flexible for you as possible.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate
right,
that.
So
could you stick that on the abeyance calendar, Laura?
Let me.
Thank
John's
you.
Tried throwing out a motion.
Yes,
to see
please.
If it'll stick. Move to approve the policy with a request to bring it back for review in October, seeking to verify the funds lost and also seeking to evaluate whether it's broad enough to serve the population.
Just that it's the park waiver fee.
Yes.
You didn't say what it was in the motion.
Okay. Friendly amendment accepted.
All right. Everybody understand the motion? Further discussion?
Further discussion would be just briefly, that fall meeting would be to look at options for what we find.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just another thing, I just want to make sure that so many of these are coming in and that you guys are using discretion. Like, I wouldn't want to see Vancouver Lake shut down 3 weekends in a row for the general public to have access to because we have so many giant waivered events there. You know, and I doubt that's going to happen, but just recognizing that these are public parks for random people to go to on a Saturday and not have 1,000 people there at an event. So.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor.
I'll second that.
We have a second. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. You have a direction, gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, so we'll move on to new business. The Lewis and Clark Trail update.
Bill and Coach. Yes.
Okay. Oh, sure. Bill and I went to Portland last week before?
Week before,
for a Metro Trails Council. It was really, it was good. It was a good meeting. It was interesting to hear what other sort of groups are doing. One of the things that pertained to Clark County that I thought was cool was the access trails, is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Access Trails Project, which analyzes trails based on ADA accessibility. And then they have this website where you can go to figure out, can I get my walker up this incline? Are the bathrooms easily accessible? So people have, you know, before they go, they can check the website and not, you know, get nervous or anxious when they're there that they've gotten themselves into a park they can't get themselves out of. So can my electric wheelchair go on this surface? Can I access this and that? So it was really cool. It was a nice presentation, and they're doing some of the trails in Clark County. They're working on the Santa Creek Greenway, putting that up on their website. So anyways, just something cool to know about, tell people about. And specifically to our Lewis and Clark thing, Dan and Bill did their presentation, and people south of us seemed pretty excited about our trail and wanted to be, you know, involved and kept in the loop and, you know, kind of work on it with us. And so it seems like, you know, just even though the river's across, there's a lot of people in Oregon who seem interested, although not thrilled to either get to our trail by riding the 205 bridge or the I-5 bridge, but nonetheless still excited and engaged in the process. So that's my 2 cents on it.
That was great. And yeah, Intertwine was there as well. And it seems like every time we talk about the Lewis and Clark Trail that somebody kind of steps up and wants to help out. And so after we got done with the meeting, we had an engineering development firm that wanted to provide their services to us towards the end of that trail. So that's our third one now, right now. So we've got actually three different firms that line.
Which one was it?
I don't remember the name. Portland-based. They're very interested in this trail on the side, and they know about the connections, obviously. So we said that we would be in touch with them. So Dan Miller, right now we're doing base mapping. Right behind you on that whiteboard right there, we updated the old trails map. And the old trails map, it was fairly dated, and it showed what all the future trails around Clark County are kind of orange shade. And then all the trails that have been completed to date are in purple. And so you kind of see the purple on the map. And this is basically a draft map that we're getting from GIS. And I think I'm gonna have them actually enhance the lines a little bit more so they're a little more prolific so you can see what's developed versus non-developed. And so on this map, what we included were the legacy lands in addition to parks. So you can actually see all the county holdings. And then, of course, we've got the city of Vancouver, Clark County, and then everything in brown here is legacy lands for pieces or go for Clark County owned parks. Everything in green is county owned parks, city and county. And so you can kind of see our trail alignment, Lewis and Clark on comes along this whole line right here, goes all the way up into Richfield and beyond, and then also on the other side of the lake. And so everything red right now is proposed. Everything in purple is actually in place. And so I'm going to update that. I think once we do that, I'll make these maps up and give them out to everybody so you guys all have them.
That'd be great. So,
any suggestions? The first thing I've seen is I just need to make the colors a little more prolific. It's hard to tell the purple from the red. So on our old map, it was pretty loud. You can see the orange versus the really thick purple lines. And so I'll go back to GIS and touch that up a little bit.
It might be worth that you get really, well, just to blurt it out, it might be worth doing some arrows out and saying, you know, Burbridge Creek Trail or something.
Yeah, do the actual trails that are existing.
Sure.
Where it gets a little funky is, you know, we've got these trails that are completed. You can't tell where that Burbridge, your little separation is in the trail. And so our intent is to make sure we connect these purple lines together. And so as a part of the Lewis and Clark Trail work that we're going to be doing, we're looking at alternative alignments. So what Dan was suggesting was 3 miles in, you know, that's pretty substantial base mapping. So I think we have to be a little more realistic that, you know, take a look at what we do have in place and maybe come up to the Burbridge Creek and use that as a potential limit and call that the northern boundary this way, and the eastern boundary over here should be somewhere here. Think of along the east side of the lake instead of on the west side. That kind of thing. So
we do have within the trails plan the lake to lake trail concept, which
yes,
could be there.
What's nice is we almost have that connection right now.
Yeah,
there's a couple little breaks down in here in Washougal, the campus Washougal, and then we'll be able to connect.
Potentially, that could be a big loop of
yes,
lake to lake and then the waterfront.
Well, Suzanne just get a good grant to close one of those gaps out there.
She finished out the money.
Oh, she finished out with the money?
We went down 10 places, and she's at 14, and we're at 17 with the Elijah Berry Trail. Another lake-to-lake trail is by the Burbridge Creek, and so when we connect with Lackness, go through Camp Curry, potentially up to Green Mountain, all we have to do is make a short connection over to Pacific Park, and from there we've actually got another connection here. So,
but these are hard pieces.
What's that?
The pieces left are the hard ones.
We've already
done the low hanging.
It costs money.
No, thank you. True.
But, Once I get this map finalized, I'll get one out to all of you so you can see it, or have it on your own.
Maybe, just for the sake of the subcommittee on trails, maybe that should be run past them before you finish.
Absolutely.
Just as an idea.
And when you say them, do you mean us, Kelly? Because we're the only ones on it. Kevin, do you like trails?
I do like trails.
I don't want to pressure you, but think about, it doesn't help our acronym name, Kelly.
Uh-oh. We can change my name.
Did you turn
I got middle name too, so we can work.
Washougal, that guy, I gave you his name.
Yeah, KKK wouldn't work.
Yeah, remember I told you he was into the non-traditional trails as well?
The BMX guy?
No, he's not BMX. He we'll talk later.
Okay.
If not, I'll give you his name again.
Okay.
Because he said at our alt-ab meeting, he said he was maybe interested.
Okay.
Vegas or Vargas or something like that.
All right. Moving on, now, this next item, also we're looking for a motion, the Lakeshore property.
Yes. Take it away. Go for it.
Okay. There is a couple of exhibits. That's probably the easiest thing to talk to. It's sort of an existing ownerships map and a proposed ownerships map. I don't know if we're going to pull those up. How this got started is actually, those of you familiar with Erickson Farms, which at one time was a farm, it's not much of a farm anymore. They are moving close to finishing their various conditions of their final plat approval. And they wanted the county to accept dedication of, if you look at the existing ownership map, that area in orange. Okay, yeah, the area in orange.
This is the piece that they want to give to us.
It's about 7.2 acres. By itself, we weren't too enthusiastic about that particular dedication because it dead ends into the railroad, so it doesn't get us down to the lake. However, they managed to sweeten the pot a bit, so at this point, staff is thinking that it would be reasonable to accept that tract dedication at the time the final subdivision map is approved and recorded. And one of the principals in Lakeshore Development, the firm that's developing the Erickson Farms, Mr. Warner, has ownership in these red parcels that you see just to the north of the orange. And he approached us saying, well, after you accept the dedication, if you would be able to give me about 2.9 acres that really buffer his home and his view shed, that sort of the black line in the middle of the orange.
He's right here.
We'd probably do that through a boundary line adjustment, add it to one of the parcels that it abuts. In return, Erickson Farms Development, of which Andrew's wife, Debbie Erickson, is a governor, would dedicate us the yellow parcel on Vancouver Lake shoreline, which is about 7 acres. So with that added incentive, we think that it's not a bad idea, and we'd like to move forward with that particular strategy and hopefully culminating in that land exchange.
You want to show page 2 of that?
Oh yeah, so the proposed ownership would then...
Your page 2 is right here on your handout. This is what it would look like after the exchange. So that yellow parcel will now become parks. And he will retain this piece, and we will retain this piece down below. So,
and actually, although it's off the map, as you move south along the Vancouver Lake shoreline, we own quite a bit of that property, most of it down to Burnt Bridge Creek. Ultimately, we would sort of, by consolidating land around the lake, we'd be able to get around the lake loop trail at some point. So that's kind of the greater vision that we're moving towards by pursuing this.
Any chance, now I know it's legacy lands, any chance of it ever developing into another Vancouver Lake Park?
I don't, the shorelines I don't think are developable.
They're not developable over there?
I don't think so. It's going to be good for a trail
okay.
On the higher end of the land. This is pretty low. This is truly shoreline.
Yeah. Well, when you see shoreline, I think
ebbs and flows
park.
It all floods.
It all floods. I like that, Dave.
Not all here. Like Pat said, there's a couple of private properties here. One is actually Porto property.
Yeah, Port of Vancouver owns one of the properties.
Right. So here's Port of Vancouver, private piece, but we own everything else except for this. So this would. This would give us a really large chunk of property towards our goal.
So. Yeah, it's beautiful.
I see that it is.
It's beautiful along there.
Never mind.
How does this all work? So are we buying the property and then we selling the property and then is it all this equal valued land exchange or?
So
how does this all work?
So right now they have both properties essentially. And they're just asking us to buy it. Because it's a planned use development, they have to deed it over to either government or county or to the homeowners association. They chose to deed it over to the county. And then Buddy wants a piece of that back in exchange for that big piece along the lakeshore. So we're going from not having any ownership here at all to actually owning two properties in that area.
And no actual cost to the
No cost to us, yes.
Yeah, no cash exchange.
But sometimes giving
a price tag. We might have a bunch of closing costs.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Title fee or something, but not, right. Yeah. We're not buying anything, they're not
They're not buying anything or paying us.
Redlands are private, so are developable. Would the Warner land be developable, or is it developable now? I'm trying to understand
which
the
one?
Warner property.
The piece that he would be
I'm trying to understand.
It's not developable. It's canyon. He's already told us, and we put that in writing, that that is not, it's not going to be developed.
Just a few sheds.
The hearings examiner wouldn't allow it in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah. He wants it for a view shed, essentially.
You're talking about the land that's giving back.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2.9 acres.
So basically, that piece of land ought to be almost a different color because it isn't really going to be developed.
I know this is a bigger topic, but every time I see land along the lake, I'm curious, and I know your master plan shows the trail going all the way around, how that's going to affect the hunting on Vancouver Lake.
The hunting
yes.
on Vancouver Lake?
Because, I mean, I know like Lacamas Creek, you know, we used to hunt that, and now it's a trail, and it's no hunting. So I'm just, I know there's a trail on one side, kind of, and I'm just curious if you guys looked at that ultimately.
Ultimately, you can actually walk across our property to the water. Once you get into the water, you're in state waters.
Right.
You can hunt. Can't hunt off our property. You can carry a weapon across the property, you just can't discharge the weapon.
Gotcha.
So that's how it works.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Bring your waders.
To take that to another step, the community has, in many cases, said they want a trail around the lake
sure.
and all the way along the river, all the way to Ridgeville. At some point in time, there will be a point where hunting may just not fit into that area.
See, and that's unfortunate.
But that's reality
yeah.
of an urban area.
Right.
New York City used to hunt everywhere.
Yeah.
And now they don't. Seattle, same thing. We may grow up and have to push that out at some point.
Yeah.
But that'll be weighed between the demand for the trail versus the demand for the hunting.
Yeah. Okay. Looking for a motion.
Move that we accept the Erickson Farm land as requested by the proposal presented by Gary.
Second.
All right, so
you
have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right.
Pat, I know you've worked on this for a long time, so congratulations.
It's still a work in progress, so.
Yes,
of course.
It's not done yet.
All right, so land and vegetation management programs, Kevin?
Yeah. So I'm not sure how much Bill has talked to you guys about this, but I'm guessing he has. He has talked to you.
I should I know I talked to you about it at our last meeting. That Kevin's group was going to be joining us, and it's adding more responsibility to parks. It's actually adding more responsibility to our parks advisory board because it expands our role. So we're really happy to have the vegetation management group join us, Kevin. And so I wanted to bring him in so I could give you a presentation of exactly what it is that the program is about. So,
About 9 months ago, the Environmental Services Department was dissolved by the county councilors and for various reasons. And so a large chunk of that department was moved to Public Works. And so that included the Clean Water Division and then also the division that I managed at the time. And then also Pat Lee and the Legacy Lands Program. So through the last 9 months, Bill and I and other members of the Public Works management team have gone through a reorganization process. And so we're joining Bill's group and we're going to be called the Parks and Lands Division. And so Pat and I are on the lands side of that thing, right? So there's parks and then there's other lands.
So just right away, does that mean we're going to become the PLAB?
Yes.
Pretty much.
That's coming. So as Bill mentioned, he asked me to come in and give you an idea of what that really means. And so the land and vegetation management side of the division includes all of these things here. You've kind of heard about what Pat does, Legacy Lands. I'm sure there's been a long-standing crossover between Legacy Lands and parks, so I won't talk about that today. And then I know you guys know about Heritage Farm and Bill's role in that as well. So I'll talk about the rest of it today and what our division does. So we have responsibility for capital permitting, which is to support the development of infrastructure in the county. So we work on capital improvement teams to do all of the permitting required for road projects, parks projects, things of that nature. So, this slide just kind of shows you the myriad of environmental permitting requirements that we face. We deal with local, state, federal regulations all across the board, things that you wouldn't even imagine. You know, you guys were talking about shorelines a little while ago, and I had to chuckle to myself because shorelines is one of the newer regulations that's been updated in the state of Washington that is very difficult to navigate. And so it's a fun one. So it's our job to know what the regulations are, what are the new regulations that are out there, how is that going to impact development specific to the county. So we build a new, we widen a road, we build a new park, we build a trail around Lake Vancouver. Very difficult to permit, but not something that is impossible. And then all of the other things that come into play there. So you can see some of the different regulations that we deal with. Next slide. And so what that means is we work on these teams, and we advise the project team, we advise the design engineers, we advise the construction managers, and we help them design projects that can go through the permitting process with relative ease so that we're not stuck with waiting on a permit for a year, 2 years, 3 years, depending on what it takes to get through the process. For example, we're building the 10th Avenue Bridge, which will connect 10th Avenue across Whipple Creek up to the fairgrounds. That project started the design and permitting phase back in 2013, and we're just now going to construction. So it takes time to get through these processes, and it's our job to help navigate those. We also make sure that when we are in construction that we are in compliance with all of those permits. Next slide. And then as part of our projects, we oftentimes have to do mitigation, environmental mitigation. And so our group does all of the planning, design, implementation, and monitoring of those mitigation projects. This is a picture of the new site on 119th Street, which you probably have seen. Big site. As you look north on 119th Street, Curtain Creek used to be a ditch, and this is what we now have. This is a mitigation site that we designed and used to permit that project. It also covers mitigation for future projects on 119th Street and in this general vicinity. So it's a 40-acre site that the wetlands and riparian habitat were enhanced, and will eventually, it'll be a jungle in 10 years. Next slide. So I also manage a group called Vegetation Management, which Bill alluded to. Now, this is the county's noxious weed control program. There's state laws that require that every property owner in the county, or in the state really, control their noxious weeds. And so we have a group of people that we're kind of split into two major programs. One is they work with landowners all over the county to they survey, identify, and make sure that those noxious weeds are controlled by private landowners. And then the other group does work on county property. So we spray roadsides, we spray parks for Bill, we do a lot of the maintenance on the legacy lands, We do work all over the place. Heritage Farm, if the county owns property, we'd probably do the weed spraying on it. And then this is...
Yeah, just quickly, yeah. Remind him that it's countywide. It isn't just outside the city. It's
everywhere. It's everywhere. We do it in the cities as well. So we work with city agencies, City of Vancouver, Washington State right-of-way, so we're dealing with the Department of Transportation. We try to get the feds to participate. Doesn't always happen. BPA is one of our classic nightmares. So,
so on these 2,000 private property owner contacts annually, does that mean that you actually do some maintenance on private property? It's,
no, primarily what we do is our guys go out and they survey for noxious weeds. We have a long history, so we kind of know where a lot of those populations are. And so we look, we find them, we send notification to the property owner that they need to control their noxious weeds. If, you know, that we're available to educate them. So we do a lot of trying to educate people on what's the right way to do things. When's the right time of year to spray, say, tansy ragwort versus blackberry versus some other noxious weed. And then if there's no action taken, there are enforcement procedures within both state and county code that we follow in order to make sure that that does happen. Mm. It's really rare, maybe one or two a year where property owners just blow us off completely and we have to go through some sort of enforcement proceeding. But the only time we do work on private property would be when we have a grant from the state. And so Japanese knotweed is a big one. We get a grant for that just about every year and coordinate with property owners along, say, the East Fork of the Lewis River or the Washougal River and control the knotweed. And so that requires a lot of outreach and a lot of property owner contacts. But the 2,000 contacts a year is just, it's just our people sending correspondence to property owners and then trying to get the noxious weed control to happen on the ground.
Thanks.
Yeah. And so this is, if you're not familiar with noxious weed laws, this is just to give you an idea of how it works. There's three classes of noxious weeds, A down through C. A, the state says, absolutely must eradicate. These are things that are new to the state, that they're still in that early phase where we can catch them, get them controlled, and or eradicated, and hopefully not have a problem where, like, you go out and see blackberry everywhere, right? That is not native to here. It came here from Asia somewhere, and if we can avoid having another blackberry or another reed canary grass or another ivy, or, you know, that's our job. Class B are things that the state has said only in these certain parts of the state are you required to control the spread of this weed so it doesn't get worse, it doesn't go to areas that it isn't already. And then class C are the things that are just, they're here and they're here to stay. So thistle, bull thistle, Canada thistle, things like that, those are here to stay. There's not much you can do about it. And so we limit our work on those based on what our weed board said is a priority. And that's the other thing is that Vegetation Management has its own advisory board called the, it's the Clark County Weed Board.
Oh, there is one.
As in,
well, we add in that kind of specific.
Weed.
Sorry, let me get more specific. The Clark County Noxious Weed Control.
There you go.
We do get funny calls like that sometimes. Next slide, please.
I want to join your weed board.
And so this just shows you a little bit about how the different areas that we do work, where I already mentioned different properties, different lands, and sort of how we attack things. We use what's called the integrated pest management approach, which is kind of like that circle, check, plan, do, act, you know. So we evaluate a site, what's the best approach, knowing what's the history of the site, what's the ecology of this site, what's this soil type, what noxious weed are we dealing with, what's the best way to control it, most cost effective, the tool that's going to actually do the job right the first time. Then we do it, we monitor. There are different methods for control. It's not always herbicide, so we'll use some mechanical control. We'll use biological control. We work a lot with the Washington State University Extension out of Pullman. They have a program that collects bugs, basically bugs that attack noxious weeds, and then helps distribute them in the state. So one of the big ones around here was on tansy ragwort. There's a little caterpillar that eats the plant. So things like that, things that attack the seeds, seed weevils, root weevils, just weird things like that. We will help them collect. We will get collections from the state, distribute them on plant populations. It's really fascinating. Or it's not, if you're not into that kind of thing. next slide. And then we do, we have a forestry program at Clark County, if you weren't aware of that. And that forestry program has two sides. One is the forest practice ordinance that the county has on the books. And that is basically where we issue forest practice permits for small things called class one, non-exempt. That's you have a couple of acres that you want to harvest some timber off of, and the state doesn't want to deal with that. They don't want anything to do with that. So the county will issue you a permit and connect you up with the State Department of Revenue so that the tax on that timber can be assessed properly. And then we also do the conversions, which is that's when new development happens. And it's going from, it was a forest, and now it's going to be a subdivision. So that's considered a conversion, and those are very seriously tracked at the state level and through GMA and things like that, Growth Management Act. We also do things like hazard tree permits, and that's just, again, to give somebody that tax number that they need with the Department of Revenue, but also to evaluate trees if they really truly
are. And this program is not inclusive of the cities, right?
It is not. Right. That is correct. Yeah, a little bit different. Next slide. And then we also have another arm of our forestry program, which is the Sustainable Forestry Program, and that is where we actively manage county forests. There's not a lot of that going on. There's about 4,000 acres or so. Primarily, it's all Camp Bonneville. But so we have written management plans and pursued sustainable forestry certification on these properties. The other properties that we have in this program are Lake Rosanna, which is a Legacy Lands property up near Ridgefield, Bratton Canyon Park, which is came over from the state, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a trust land transfer.
Green Mountain near Camas, and then we recently acquired Spud Mountain, which is up near Livingston Mountain. Yeah. And so, like I said, about 4,000 acres. Sustainable forestry means it's sort of a different model of forestry. In this region, we have the forestry industry it used to primarily focus on clear cut, plant with a single species, Douglas fir. And that was this model, right? And that's all you did. And so what we're doing now is trying to basically give these forests that the county owns a little shot in the arm, bring them back into health, get them growing at a rate that they should be growing at, diversify some of the forests with different species. So our approach is more of selective thinning and not clear cutting. And so we started this in 2012, basically. We've harvested at Camp Bonneville. Go to the next slide. We've harvested at Camp Bonneville, thinning at Camp Bonneville, and thinning at Green Mountain so far. So about 740 acres have been thinned to date. And our goal is to get all of the stands that are in this sort of priority status that need that shot in the arm to get those thinned in the next 5 to 10 years. And so some of the big benefits that we're seeing, aside from the health of the forest, is we make a fair amount of money on this. So a fair amount of revenue comes into the county. And on Camp Bonneville especially, which I think you guys are going to be excited about, is That money goes into a special fund called the Camp Bonneville Timber Fund that we're not allowed to take anywhere else. So the general fund can't get their hands on it. And it stays in that fund, and the primary purpose of it is to reinvest in Camp Bonneville in the future. And so some of the things that have already been done out there are some work on the buildings, replacing some of the bridges so that, you know, some of the crumbling infrastructure is ready and available for us when we want to develop it as a park in the future. We do some of the noxious weed control out there, and then we don't just cut down trees, we plant them as well. And so I think right now the net revenue that's in that account is about $1.3 million, and we're starting thinning out there again this year with an anticipation of hopefully about $1 million a year. Don't quote me on that, but that's our target.
But your drive on those are not revenue. They're driven by health of the forest.
That's correct.
And that's important to say, yes. Because that's really
what we're after, is thinning those stands at, you know, maybe 30% of their 30% of the trees that are out there is what we would take out. And our forester is really good about identifying different markets. Like you'll see on the picture on the right there, those are trees that were selected for transmission poles, it's a really valuable market, comparatively speaking, to just a saw log that would come off of these properties. And the other value of those sustainable forestry certifications that I mentioned is those bring a little bit higher price in the market. It's something that we can't export to China. It has to stay in the United States. And then it comes with that logo. And you've probably seen that logo, FSC, on things. I noticed it on McDonald's cup not too long ago, believe it or not. But the idea is that that's more and more a popular thing, is to have sustainably sourced products. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
So we're going to be rebuilding some schools, and there's a couple of them that are really, the community is really interested in a sustainable look, feel, design built
right.
into their school. And I'm looking at some of the logs and all of that, and I'm wondering, who do we contact to connect to get some local timber that would be, say, accented as part of the media center or something like that?
There's a couple of mills that we use almost exclusively, not exclusively, because we have to be open to the different bids, but Columbia Vista, which is in Camas, is a mill, a local mill. They're just right down there on the waterfront, kind of between Vancouver and Camas. They're a good one. And then RSG Forest Products is another one that you could probably talk to both of those mills.
I think that would be kind of a cool element.
Yeah, it would.
Locally harvested.
This school was built with wood that came from Clark County. Yeah, that would be good.
We did that with the First Timber Community Center.
Did you?
Yeah. So it's been done. That's a good idea.
And if you want to talk with our forester, I can send his information along to you as well. Okay. I think that was about it, wasn't it? Yeah. So there's my contact information if you're interested. Questions about environmental stuff that comes up over the years. We've been very active in helping Bill over the years in park developments. I'm helping him with that Hawkinson disc golf course right now. So
your division approved the private forest management plan?
So if the private forest management plans, if it's for a tax break, if it's for one of the county's tax programs, that goes through the assessor's office. Now, the assessor's office, I believe at this point, does that on their own. They typically don't involve our forester.
Which explains why we got away with ours.
Maybe so. That's something that we used to help with, and the current assessor has not been asking for our help. It's something that we're always available to help property owners with. Something that makes sense.
So you do actually provide help with that?
Yes.
If we want to.
Okay. Yeah, so
a private thing, but...
If you have property that you own and you want to know what's the best way to manage it,
talk to our, we have two foresters on staff right now. One, his name is Jim Vandling. He's been around forever. He's getting ready to retire, so we've hired a new forester, that young, bright individual. His name's Hunter Decker. Yeah. He's all about forestry. He named his dog Douglas Fur, F-U-R. So, yeah, he's all about forestry. He's a great guy. That's it. That's all I had.
Okay, any other questions?
Just add on to Kevin's presentation. If you look at that last slide there, they actually did some thinning at Camp Hope, and we used those proceeds to do the master plan at Camp Hope, which was fantastic.
That was really interesting. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I've worked with Kevin on a number of projects over the years, so I saw him in the early years of his career. He's grown a lot. I'm glad to see you back.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm really happy with Kevin's group on the Forest and Parks. It's a good fit.
All right. Do we have a lot of you were asking a question, Lee?
Yeah. Pat was on the agenda to share the legacy lead.
Jump ahead.
Oh. You did.
Okay. Okay.
It's the pecking order, right?
Yep.
So, not nearly as colorful as the presentation that Kevin just put together. Matter of fact, you see lots of white letters on blue background. So, but it just provides a very high-level overview of the Legacy Lands Program, which is my primary responsibility. And what we strive for is to leave a community legacy through the program that includes healthy lakes and streams, abundant fish and wildlife, a variety of outdoor recreation opportunities, and working farms and forests. Kevin's given you some background on some of the forestry that we get involved in. A lot of those lands were inherited by the county from the Department of Natural Resources through the Trust Land Transfer Program, which I and Kevin have both been involved trying to bring some of those properties that we can use to generate a little revenue for the county into being. Sort of the goals, next slide, sort of the objectives that sort of fit under that include trying to contribute to an interconnected system of parks, natural areas, open space, trails, and greenways, both for wildlife and for people too. And also the statute is very direct, saying, you know, this can support working farms and forests as well. In the past, we've tried to get some agricultural landowners engaged in conservation easements and things like that, but they have not been too interested today, so we've made most progress on the forests area. There's a couple of properties that we helped fund, for example, in the Upper East Fork Lewis River that were intended to be maintained as forest base and actually maintained by the Columbia Land Trust and not ourselves. Accomplishments, really, since the program started, we've acquired about 5,000 acres. Several acquisitions have occurred along the East Fork Lewis River, Vancouver Lake, and Lacamas Lake. We'll continue to look for opportunities like the Warner Land trade we spoke of earlier for that. Funds have supported assembly of the Burnt Ridge Greenway, Salmon Creek Greenway, and Washougal River Greenway. We have several little small parcels along the Washougal River that provide access to the river for people. And we've actually conducted about 11 salmon habitat restoration projects on our East Fork properties, another two near Vancouver Lake along our property known as the Buckmeyer Slough. Some of these are still in process, some have been completed, but so we are actively trying to support some of the salmon recovery objectives for the Lower Columbia region on our properties. What the primary funding source for the program is the Conservation Futures Levy. It is a property tax levy of up to 6.25 cents per thousand valuation. It is primarily an acquisition fund. By statute, 85% of the prior year levy must be used to acquire open space, farm, and forest land. Only 15% of the prior year levy may be used for program management, maintenance, and stewardship. We enacted the ordinance in 1985. We bringing in currently about $2.3 million a year, which we try to leverage at all possible with grants, partnerships, and things of that sort. So the money goes a little further, and it's a very important source of local match for grant applications through the state. On the acquisition end, we only work with willing landowners. There's no condemnation involved. Properties typically have high ecological and or recreational value, or they're in a key location, like Vancouver Lake Shoreline, for example. County initiates and completes priority acquisitions independently. We also periodically solicit acquisition proposals from cities and nonprofit conservation organizations and do distribute money to those. In the past, there has been an independent citizens advisory committee that reviews those. That might be one of the new things that you get involved in as a Parks Advisory Board now that this program is under Parks. The 15% allows us to do the basic maintenance, which includes those types of things. And what it doesn't include, you can go to the next slide, is there's really no ongoing revenue source for significant public use improvements, which is unfortunate. One of the things that we have advocated for the last few legislative sessions is to bump that 15% up to 25%, which might give us a little more money to do some of those things, as well as more money to address emergency capital maintenance or whatever that we might be facing on our properties. So grants and partnership projects are critical for large restoration and capital improvement projects. And until 2011, the real estate excise tax was a source that we looked at to help fund these types of things, but that of course was redirected at that period of time and is not available for us at the moment through the county budget process. And the guiding document is the Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan. It divides the county into 19 sub areas, generally along watershed boundaries. For example, there's Upper Salmon Creek, Lower Salmon Creek, Upper East Fork Lewis, Lower East Fork Burnt Bridge Creek. So 19 of those have been identified. High value conservation areas are identified. In each of those, there is a general list of priorities that we strive for in each of those sub areas. And there's also a more specific list of priority projects that we pursue over a 6-year period. Next slide. And one of the things that we are currently involved in is kind of updating this 6-year priority list. We have been in touch with cities, nonprofit organizations, soliciting what might be their priorities in terms of projects, identifying potential grant opportunities and financing tools. Review with the county manager, we hope will happen later this month, early April, and based on discussion, we will at some point be going to the Board of County Councilors, hopefully with, here is a list of what we think are very important projects, and here are some potential financing tools that we could try to use to make all of them happen. Now, the decision will have to be made whether any of those are exercised or not, but that's kind of the current status of where we are. That's it.
All right. So with legacy lands, do I understand it right that they cannot become parks? You can put a trail through them.
You can. I mean, you can certainly probably it would not be used for a community park or a neighborhood park, certainly for regional parks. It's a source that could be used. And for example, although we keep trying to get some grant funding to help develop the Daybreak, Lower Daybreak Park area,
That money hasn't come yet, but that was actually purchased with Conservation Futures, that entire property.
Pat, is there a connection between like development or mitigation work that has to be done when people are building roads or constructing businesses and they're in charge with having to do some conservation mitigations or resource protection increases? Is there a funding source? Is there an opportunity to work with those folks? Or is that not a connection?
Yeah, there's a connection. And a lot of times through the mitigation process, Kevin has brokered locating some of the mitigation on some of the properties that we own, which, you know, provide, generally it's been, you know, sort of riparian restoration oriented type enhancements that provide a general ecological lift to the site. And that does happen. But there is no funding source that derives from that. It's just the work that can be directed to improve the condition of some of our sites.
We've toyed with the idea of a cumulative effects fund, which would, in all likelihood, be used on sites like this. But that would be where, say, a private developer doesn't have their own mitigation site available to them, but they need some mitigation. Right. So they would just pay some money into this fund. And then we would use that on restoration projects. But we haven't, past councils have not been open to the idea, so we just haven't pursued it more recently.
Good and bad in that. So.
Yeah.
Pat, can you share with us at some point in the future a couple of things? One, how, once you've developed the priority list, is that, I know that's a major project, part of your work, and how, what that list looks like at some point, just share that with the Parks Commission.
No.
Because I think they need to understand the complications of what you do and how that priority list is developed, because it takes a lot of different policies and a lot of different issues to get to that point. And I wouldn't expect you to try to educate us on every little asset or venue of that particular thing, but if we know at least that that 6-year priority list, it helps a lot, I think, for them. The other thing, one of the things that Casey and I are going to be looking at is the trail system. And one of my biggest passions is the greenway systems. Mm-hmm. And that
East Fork.
East Fork, the Lewis River Greenway.
Yeah.
Is something we were brought into a year ago because there was some potential lands to be sold, and we asked Bill to step in and help us with not losing those properties. But the goal is to have a greenway along that whole corridor.
Right.
And the only way that's going to happen is a partnership between your program and our parks program and a few other city programs and everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
the frontier for this county to do that. We've lost probably a lot of the opportunities in Salmon Creek and others, but that one is such a golden jewel. I just hope that we can continue to look at that vision and not close too many doors on what could happen with that.
No, it's
for everybody.
It's I think all of us share that as a priority. We'd like to see it happen.
Oh, that's
we've assembled most of the lands.
Yeah.
The challenges are really the financing for the trails. And then because we have some land on the south side and some land on the north side, you're talking to connect them throughout its length. And topographically you're limited in
but
some
a lot
respects
of times
too.
Priorities
crossing the river with bridges could be
a lot of your priority lists are created to do those things.
So yes, absolutely.
That's why I want you to share them. This program used to be in parks, and now it's back in parks. It's a great mix, and I'm just happy to have you back. But I just think we need to understand the complexities, because there was a lot of reasons it was pulled out of parks to allow it to be more successful. So we'll just hope it's equally as successful while it's in parks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move along. Parks Foundation grant application, Bill?
Yes. Okay, so for the 2017 year, and first of all, Karen Wellen, who's not here today, so you can put up a mic for the information for us. So we've got three grants that were
going forward. And the first one is the day camps. And so we're asking for $9,315, and it'll make the day camps available to youth for free between the ages of 10 and 17. And so a lot of stuff going on at Camp Hope. Those folks are very active, and they've been very successful in running day camps for the last 3-4 years. And it's really growing in interest. And so the camp is basically full for most of the year. So this is going to help serve the underprivileged children. And so if we get the grant, that'll allow a lot more children to come in and utilize the camp. So that's the intent of this particular grant. The next one is the Ripple Creek Regional Park wayfinding signs. And so we do have some signs out in the parks, but not enough to actually allow people to find their way out easily. So there's about 4.5 miles of trail throughout Whipple Creek, and you can really get turned around. So Whipple Creek itself is a jewel of a park where you're inside these woods, and you wouldn't think that you're anywhere in Clark County. I mean, you're lost in the woods here. And so there's a lot of trail systems that intersect here. And so the idea of the wayfinding signs is to place them at critical intersections. So when you come up to one of them, you know exactly where you are in the park, and you can find your way out. So we get quite a few calls every year saying, I'm lost, come help me. And so that's going to be the primary focus here. So $2,500 will get us there, and we're going to get some help from the Whipple Creek Restoration Committee on this. So that's our second grant. Third grant is Vancouver Lake Regional Park. It's a piece of equipment that we want to add. As you can see, the play equipment that we have is pretty scant. We have this little platform, and this we used to have a couple of these in here. They're based on basically on a car spring. Mm-hmm. They rock back and forth, they break, and I think we're in our 15th one here. We want to get those out of there, plus they're dangerous. And so what we'd like to do is replace it. You can see all this open area, and it's really serving more purpose. I'd like to put this in there.
That looks like fun.
When you get spinners, they are really cool, and the kids just love them.
Does that spin?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, spin and climb.
Okay, I just have to say, we put some kind of a spinning something at Anderson, and we're now having to remove it because kids just go until they throw up.
We
have a playground monitor that just times kids on it. I mean, it becomes insane. They love it, but
she's learning the hard way.
We won't be putting one in anywhere else.
Are you taking it out?
No, yeah, we're removing it. Well, then you can go to the parks. If it comes out, you can have it. Cool. There we go. We don't have
to go. Do we cut it one
fast? It is wild. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy.
Kids parks doesn't care as much about help these schools do.
But they're literally flinging off it because they get going so fast and they can't hold on anymore.
We've got spinners in a few of our parks now. Kids absolutely love them, but like Jennifer said, you know, you probably go until they feel it.
Fairgrounds, and they go round and round till they just get sick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they get up and do it again. They love it.
So, you know, in years past, we've been putting in for grants, and last year we put in a grant for the Children's Garden out at Follett Park and got that. So, thank the Parks and Rec for all the grants that we've gotten.
So, yes. Can I ask on the first one, the Hope Day Camp?
Yes.
I see it's scheduled for March. Oh, it's March through November.
Yes, that's
what true. What would the granting period be for this? When are we asking for this one? When would this come available? If it was funded.
This is just a request. It hasn't gotten anything.
It's a request.
So it would be basically next year's program, I suppose. Is this one starts?
Yeah, later on this year, all the way through, I'd say May of next year.
I think this is actually a question for you. More
yes.
When are grants distributed is what my question is.
It's, I think they're distributed at the end of the year.
So they were just distributed for that.
Actually, I think, you know, when we have the big luncheon, the big ceremony, that's when the checks are handed out.
Yeah.
The grant decisions are made, the checks are handed out.
Yeah.
They give you a big check like this.
Yeah.
You
know,
walk around with it.
It takes a couple months before it gets to
And then you have to fund the money back.
So
spend the money.
I think is that going to 2020?
So they give you the big check, but it isn't real money.
Typically, I'm going to say that the grant period is May through May. So like the Children's Garden.
That's what I was trying to remember. I doubt with it, but I just don't remember.
So those are the three that we're going to submit for this year. So a little bit of variety.
Parks Foundation.
Yeah, so to piggyback on what Bill was saying, we're meeting on Friday, next Friday, to discuss the grants, and which will be presented at our annual luncheon coming up on May 9th at Warehouse 23. Another thing that's coming up that we would love to have you guys think about is the Florence B. Wager Awards. We need a community leader, a volunteer, and a park staff. If you know anybody who's gone over and above their position, please contact me and I can send you an application for that. That's also awarded at our annual luncheon on May 9th. Tomorrow we have the St. Patty's for Kids coming up at the Lukey Center, and it will spread into the Marshall Center. It's completely free. It's not a fundraiser. It's just a community event, but we have a lot of raffle items and stuff that we will be raffling off to get some more funds. And so if you have children, grandchildren, please come by. And I'm really glad that Dr. Allen is here, because I'd really like to connect with you in the upcoming event that we have. So let's talk to you later about that. So yeah, that's and then other than our annual luncheon and our St. Patty's, we have our golf tournament on August 21st. And we have a Halloween event that is new this year, which is going to be the exact same model as St. Patty's. And it's going to be at Lukey Marshall Center, which is going to be a safe environment and a healthier choice environment for trick-or-treating. So instead of going to the mall where you can only go to two stores and you get and everybody's out of candy, our event's going to be more where the kids can come and be dressed up, trick-or-treat, and not necessarily have candy, but have other healthier choices that they can get in a swag bag. And there'll be contests for their costumes and stuff. So, nice. And it's just, and it's going to be all indoors, so it's a nice, safe environment and non-threatening, non-scary environment for young children.
So Jennifer,
yes.
Why did we move from Shorty's over here, and are we going to have the adult playtime in the evening?
It's no longer.
Okay.
So the reason why we moved is because Colin Mahoney, who was on our board, owned Shorty's.
Uh-huh.
He no longer owns Shorty's. So it changed hands. Therefore, we needed to find another place because we were getting Shorty's for free. And because of that, we couldn't make the evening adult one viable because of the fees for the bands and everything. So therefore, we just went ahead with the kids once.
And they wouldn't let us have green beer here anyway.
So, the city of Vancouver has been gracious enough to give us the space for free. Okay. So
I didn't know Colin did that.
What?
I didn't read that he sold it.
So that was all free, therefore we were able to net a pretty good on that. But if we had to go to an event space, we would have had to pay thousands of dollars plus the $3,000 for the band, and it wouldn't have been viable for us to do. So, but with the kids event, we've been getting a lot of sponsors and vendors where we're actually netting about the same amount that we would have netted had we had the two events at Shorty's. So it's grown to be a big event for children.
Yeah.
Just so everybody knows, on your meeting agenda, the upcoming events, both the St. Patty's Kids and the Park Foundation luncheon is listed there. So
yes.
Doors open at 11:30.
Just for everybody's knowledge, we really should attend that luncheon.
Yes.
We need to be there. If we're not there, I don't think they really need to be given us funds.
Correct. So if you're interested in tickets or buying a table, please contact me. Talk to your employers if they're interested in sponsoring a table. Let us know.
What's the date again on the luncheon?
May 9th.
I know we've been buying two tables over the last couple of years.
But yeah, but you never invite the Park Advisory Board to your
table. I actually need to expand it out. I've got to make room for four.
Yeah, you make us spend for ourselves.
I know.
That's all right. It's all fun.
I still got to give him a bad time.
You use all the pay you receive by doing this downstairs.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so we're running a little bit behind, so I want to Bill, you've got the manager's report, and then we've got the subcommittee work session.
Yeah, I don't want to burn up the rest of the time on that. I mean, unless you want me to, unless you want to run a little longer.
It's up to you.
I've got these, and I wanted to pass these out real quickly.
Yeah, you want to hit highlight or one or two?
I can highlight them really quickly. Pass those around. I've got some extras here, too. I'm just going to blow through this real quickly. If you have any questions, please feel free. And still working on that possible land donation for the 10 acres in North County off Gable Road for a potential off-lease area. I don't know if that's going to go through or not, because he's starting to talk about selling to us rather than donating, so that's going to take it off the table. I met with Julie Hannon and Monica Tupperville about a week and a half ago to talk about the upcoming annexation of parks. And so Kelly Meadows Neighborhood Park, obviously that is one of the 36 promised parks we built as part of the MPD levy. And so that will actually go to the city, and we will still be on the hook to develop it and pay for its maintenance forevermore, because the MPD levy will be collected in that area before we run the park. And so that's what will be expended. The PIP fees collected within the annexation will change as well, so that boundary line will snap differently. The MPD levy or MPD boundary will not change. The future of Kirk Springs Wildlife Habitat is negotiable. We don't have to give it to the city, but if and we do actually have a plan to develop it within the next 2 years, 2.5 years or so. I think it's in our best interest to actually make that happen, and we can talk about if the city wants it at a later time. The Austin Heritage property acquisition is still moving forward, and so that's that piece on north of 99th Street, the east of Highway 503. That's that piece in 6 that we've been talking about quite a while, and so we're nearing the finish line with that acquisition. Hawkinson Park, so Kevin and I are meeting next Tuesday with HBR representative to with Troy Jones of Northwest Urban Homes to confirm a bridge crossing. That's that connection to the west side of Hawkinson Community Park. So hopefully we can kind of dial that in. The family who's selling the property is getting pretty anxious, so we need to come up with a conclusion on that. So Pat, Kevin, and I are working with DNR on a potential land swap up at Hanwood Trail, which, if you're familiar with Hanwood Trail, it connects Looser Falls essentially to Holman Falls. And in our history, we always kind of thought we owned it. We don't. We have a lease on it. So DNR approached us about trading a piece of property. Do we have that, Laura? Did I put that on? I think I did.
No.
I didn't. Okay. Right above the Hanwood Trail, there's a long sliver of land, and that they want, because otherwise you'd have to basically lob over the top of it. And so we're kind of deliberating on that. Probably decide on whether we're going to make that trade. I think it's in our best interest to do that. We really don't have much of a use of that long, narrow sliver, but the trail itself is used hugely by our citizens. So that's something we'll be reporting into you as that moves along. Pat met with Barbara Barker with RCO. That VA retreat at Frenchman's Bar, that's a dead issue. It's just way too cumbersome to move forward. So I did talk to Sean Gard, who is the mayor of the city of Washougal. And I told him we will look for other viable sites that are not grant encumbered, you know, for a VA site. He does want a piece roughly around 25 acres in size, potentially, you know, on water, if at all possible, so he can provide fishing and, you know, water access to the VA folks. I'm not sure if we can accommodate, but we're going to try. We'll see what we can come up with. Eric and I plan to draft a lease agreement with Prairie Softball Association and Vancouver Girls Softball Association to manage and program Prairie Fields. If you recall, we're going to have the City of Battleground do that, but they are more in dire straits, and they had to bail off of it. We don't have the money, and well, we do have money to maintain it. Our intent, when we sold the counselors, was to buy the property and another entity that'll be able to maintain it at their expense. That's what we're trying to accomplish right now. So there's a real strong interest. Prairie Softball League has been out there for a long time. They've actually been managing it for many years. So we're gonna give them a shot.
Is the VGSA pulling out of Salmon Creek, or they would just manage to?
They're expanding. Okay. They got 450 girls playing down there, and they need to expand. So
they want
to partner out there. So
okay.
We're all in.
Yeah, they are a good partner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they've been great. And Karen and I are starting up, getting ready for a pre-application conference for Camp Vote. This is, you know, after the master plan has been completed. We're taking the next step so we can start moving forward. And Kelly's up about that as well. And then this is a new one. Council Vote has asked about assembling a task force in the near future to work on the Camp Bonneville master plan. So that needs to start sometime in the future. We know that ordinance cleanup will go on for a couple of years, but we know just master plan on that site will take about 2 years. Ultimately, it would be really nice to get a master plan initiated, started, and so we can get an idea of what that footprint of that park system is gonna look like out there before the ordinance is completed, as far as being cleaned up. Once the US government pulls out, you know, we're on our own. And so if we have areas that we might be going off of the area or outside of the area that's being, you know, cleaned up right now, we might have the latitude to actually have them go address those areas. We not only just the area, but we also need to look at depths. You know, if we're going to be putting utilities in different areas, we need to look at that as well. So a master plan, I think, would be timely. If we get that done within the next 2 years. I think the ordinance is going to be, what, maybe 3 to 4 years out still, possibly.
Yeah, it depends. Will there be any funding to help with that master plan?
Well, like Kevin was talking about, you know, the forestry efforts out there has put about $1.3 million into Camp Bonneville. That those funds are for that purpose. For park development in the future. So we do have money.
A good heads up.
Pacific Park parking lot expansion dedication is scheduled for Saturday, May 13th. And that's in advance. So Vancouver Municipal Senior Softball, we built a softball field out there, also worked on the parking lot expansion, and it is looking really good. And so it'd be nice to have a good turnout. I plan to go there for that dedication. And the one thing I had a footnote is that we might also have a Tower Crest dedication on that same day. I had it on my calendar as a placeholder.
It's supposed to be the one right after Mother's Day.
Oh, is it? I think I got it. So I'll check in with Elise Minnie and find out.
Oh, I got it on my calendar because I don't know.
On the back side of this is the annexation map. Just need to see that.
Do you want to show any of the pictures?
Yeah, so real quickly, on this map, so you want to scroll it up just real quickly. Okay, so here's Green Meadows Golf Club. Here's Kelly Meadows. It's our park. It actually touches the golf course, and that's the one that we're going to hand over to the city. Here's Schaefer, the one that we sold to the city, sold our interest back to them. This is Curtin Springs Wildlife Habitat. That's the piece that we will address at a later time with them.
So after the annexation, anything within that city area no longer would go towards that Kelly Meadows. Is that correct? It goes to the city's district?
The MPD funds will continue to come to the county. Okay. So that's why we have to pay for that park, for the maintenance of it, because that's where the funds were earned, and they will continue to be earned there.
But as far as the impact fees go?
Correct. Yes, so we're going to lose in PIF 7, we're going to lose this much area, which is about 1/7 of PIF 7.
Yeah, because I just, the other day, did a quick calculation based on how many preliminary plats there are. It's about $275,000 in park impact fees that will be lost.
Yes.
When the city takes that over.
Correct.
What they would talk about. Well, it's not going to Kelly Meadows, it's going to be going to city, right?
City parks.
Yeah, but it has to be expended in the PIF district it was collected in. So
one thing we're talking about with the city of Vancouver is we might hang on to this PIF area until such time that we get enough money to pay for this park. So if you go back to our PIF sheet, you're going to see that I think we've got about
$200,000 or $300,000. We're going to need about $800,000 to $900,000 to build this park up, and so we may end up collecting those PIF fees until such time that we can actually build that park. After that's done, then we'll turn that PIF district over.
And
to
turn it on. Good idea.
We'll do that with a transfer agreement at some point in time. Okay, that's it.
Okay, Barbara.
Oh, I have one. I have one other topic. If I could hit it real quick.
Okay.
I talked with Marie Bouvier because we're probably all wondering about our all-PAB meeting that was agreed to for the first quarter. And she, like the rest of us, has had a winter that's been very challenging. She's currently working on setting up a date, though. Ridgefield is planning on moving forward and supporting that. They're looking forward to coming together with us again. So it's on track, and Ridgefield is paying for it. So she says, I've got my venue, and I've got the commitment from Steve Stewart that he will pay for the goodies. So, and she and I are going to connect with Mark Bolt, because he made some commitments at our last meeting about the Blue Ribbon Commission reinvigoration. So we're going to be asking him to speak at it. So just to, I know we're all chomping at the bit that March is here and we haven't seen any or heard anything. It's underway. Now, on the schedule, so be expecting to be hearing more about that. Subcommittees, Kelly and Jay asked me to take a relook. One of the things that, and the anticipated thought, and it may not be working out so good here, at our planning meeting, as we talked about how a lot of times the subcommittees have problems connecting, and that it might be nice if we could allocate a period of time, even a short period of time, at the end of each of our PAB meetings where we know we've already planned to come together, so that those subcommittees might at least connect. And the thought process is good there, because like I, for one, have our bylaws that we were working on that we just needed to come together and vote to bring to the PAB, right? So that's where it would work. So you could do, you know, all your little work at either times that parts of you connect, or that you do via email or such, do your work. And then if you need to make a motion, you really have to have a meeting, notified meeting, if you've got a quorum. That just lifts all of it. So the intent was to have, you know, 15 or 20 minutes at the end of each meeting that two of the subcommittees could have time. That would mean that once a quarter you would get to meet with your subcommittee. And then along those lines, they said, well, can you refocus us on why we have subcommittees? Because there was a question on that. And I think today's meeting really speaks to why we need subcommittees. I mean, our intention is to have time to do other works or such, but our meetings are so full that it's all we can do to stay on top of what the team brings to us and needs our immediate attention. So if we want to do some of the works that need to be done, preliminary work, we don't have time here to work it all through. We need subcommittees that can take on these tasks and bring back fully formulated, constructive action items for the PAB to act on in these meetings. That's all we really have time for here. And along those lines, I pulled out some of the materials to help us out there. You've got the little subcommittee matrix, and I understand, Kevin, that you're wanting to sit back and digest things before you jump on one.
Yep.
But I guess the term that we've used is, yeah, we could be a rubber stamp PAB and just come here and rubber stamp the stuff that comes through. That is not this group. This group is much more proactive than that and much more engaged. So we really look forward to you joining at least one. But we've got our business and financial and grants. And the one action item we had from last year was asking that all of the subcommittees. Because we're new, we built the list of subcommittees based on our action on PRAC, which was where we were at before the divorce. It doesn't mean that these are going to be the standing ones. They do not have definitions because the groups were supposed to come together and define themselves, what their visions were, and have one goal for the year and submit that description. And I did assemble all of the descriptions that I've received. Where'd it go? It should be in the packet that Laura put together. Let's see, the bylaws, startup. I don't see it.
Do you want me to steal this one? Here, you can have it.
Oh, here, I found it. That was in the middle of the... Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. So we've got the various subcommittees. So I haven't gotten one from Chris yet. Or from you, Jay. The rest of them, I know that the one for our partnership one needs some wordsmithing. But that at least is a beginning. Kelsey just got her definition to us and already has her 2017 goal in place.
Go, Kelsey, go.
So, as far as clearly...
Kelsey's team.
Yeah, Kelsey's team. So as far as what we came together and agreed on is in the subcommittee bylaws. You know, we kind of agreed that this was the starting point for us. And the fact that a subcommittee shouldn't necessarily be just PAB members, that having members of the community is a good thing and permissible by our bylaws. The number of people that are on a subcommittee, you don't want your subcommittee so large that you can't work. And so usually three or four people is adequate. But there were times like when our partnership meeting was putting together the big all-PAB meeting, that we had, what, about 15 people from all over the neighborhoods helping us, right, Dave? So there's times that your subcommittee might need to be larger. You as the chair of that subcommittee get to make that decision. It's not defined. If as you move forward, you know, and you're trying to put it together, we've got some pretty clear bullet points here that it needs to meet at least twice a year, but nothing more than that. A meeting doesn't have to be in person. It can be via Skype, via conference call. You know, a meeting is a meeting. It's not defined. The only time you need to worry is if you have more than four people, more than three members. When you hit that fourth, you've got a quorum of our board, and that must be a fully public, open, notified meeting. So you want to stay at three or below of PAB members, okay? So just going through here, it just gives you some guidelines on what it looks like.
But if we met right after this meeting, would we have to notify?
No, it's already notified.
So we don't have to say like a subcommittee meetings afterwards or anything like that?
No,
I don't think so.
No, you don't have to define it that much. It's still about parts.
Great.
And also, if there's some help you need with a subcommittee meeting, you might need to be there. I'll be more than happy to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was just a little job aid I put together for you on how to try to identify times that are common to everyone. It's just on the doodle poll, because that's the other real challenge, is trying to get people's time availability that they can meet. So that's what's in the package here. It's just real quickly. What we need this year is, I know that my team has not come together. We still got, like I said, the bylaws that we went through that I was hoping we might do a motion on real quick today, just if we met after this. So we've done some work, but getting together has been the challenge. That was the objective that they thought in the pre-planning meeting of having these little sub-meetings. That was fragmented and quick jump through, but is that what you needed? Also, I'd like to say, if, as you're working on your subcommittees, honestly, if you have questions, I'm available. A lot of times, it's after the kids are in bed, right? I don't get back to you till then. But I am happy to talk with you. I'm a good bouncing board for you. I'll help where I can.
I wanted to add to that program. I'm not a real big advocate of the subcommittees because I've been involved with Parks Commissions for more than 40 years and I've not seen a successful effort at the subcommittee level. But there again, that it, with this kind of effort and this kind of work, it will be helpful. And so I'm advocating to follow what Barbara's trying to propose here, and hopefully we can honor it and move forward with some of these things. One of the things that I want to make sure in the subcommittee level, when we do our goals and objectives in a subcommittee level, that it fits nicely and tucks into the comprehensive plan. And so we've addressed many projects over the development of this thing. We spent a lot of money on this. We put a lot of time, a lot of effort to it. And each one of these subcommittees, the issue has been addressed in the comprehensive plan. So I'd like to think that we will go back to the comp plan and find what it is, where it's said in there, that's one of our goals or objectives, and make it tie to the subcommittee. So we're not off on a tangent doing a project that wasn't addressed for the next 6 years in this plan or the next 20 years, and that our high priority projects are being addressed somewhere in one of the subcommittees. But that's just my own statement on that. So I've got extra copies here of the comprehensive plan. If people don't have them, let's have them. Each of the chairs ought to be able to find the spot in there that addresses the goal that they've established for that subcommittee. That's my added little piece to the puzzle of that, and I think it's good. And I noticed that on the subcommittee, I am on the trails subcommittee, so I hope everybody knows I'm on one of the subcommittees.
You rebel. Abstain from them all.
All right, so I know we're running late, and folks have got to go.
Understand.
I will open for any last comments, thoughts.
I have one comment real quick.
Okay.
Where did I put it on my... Dr. Allen and I went to the beaches.
Yeah.
The beaches for the Parks Foundation fun thing, and I would hope that as the Parks Foundation has events, that we are supportive because those dollars are critical to the funding of the projects that we do. So I just want to make that thank you for coming. I was glad to see you there. And the other thing, I'll comment on next week.
All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm gonna go back.